an Osho talk. Turning In, number 2.
Enno said, "Good friends, in this teaching, from the outset, sitting in meditation does not concern the mind, nor does it concern purity. We do not talk of steadfastness. If someone speaks of viewing the mind, then I would say that the mind is of itself delusion. And as delusions are just like fantasies, there is nothing to be seen. If someone speaks of viewing purity, then I would say that man's nature is of itself pure. But because of false thoughts, true reality is obscured. If you exclude delusions, then the original nature reveals its purity. If you activate your mind to view purity without realizing that your own nature is originally pure, delusions of purity will be produced. Since this delusion has no place to exist, then you know that whatever you see is nothing but delusion. Purity has no form, but nonetheless, some people try to postulate the form of purity and consider this to be Zen practice. People who hold this view obstruct their own original natures and end up by being bound by purity. One who practices steadfastness does not see the faults of people everywhere. This is the steadfastness of self-nature. The deluded man, however, even if he doesn't move his own body, will talk of the good and bad of others the moment he opens his mouth, and thus behave in opposition to the way. Therefore, both viewing the mind and viewing purity will cause an obstruction to the way."
Manisha. There is a tremendous gap between morality and religion. Most of the religions are just moralities. Their function is to decide what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong. They look at man through his actions and they decide his innermost being accordingly. But this is a false approach. Sometimes a man may be thinking he is doing good, and it may appear to others also that he is doing good. will harm immensely. Of course, unintentionally. For example, Krishna in Srimad Bhagavad Gita argues his disciple Arjuna to go for the war. Arjuna's father has a brother who was blind, and he has 100 sons, perhaps being blind he has nothing else to do. And now the question was, to whom the kingdom belongs? The sons have become of age. Up to now, Arjuna's father was ruling the kingdom because the blind brother could not do that. So the question has never arisen before. But now it was a different situation. Arjuna had only 5 brothers, including himself. And on the other side were 100 sons. And they demanded that their father has been denied half of the kingdom just because he is blind. Now they want to claim the whole kingdom because you are only 5 and we are 100. They gathered near Delhi in a vast open ground all the armies of both the sides. Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna. But seeing the situation that on both the sides there are relatives, although they were fighting, they were cousin brothers, and in every way everybody was entangled with each other. The grandfather of Arjuna, who was one of the most wisest men of those days, Bhishma, has decided to be on the side of the blind son. He loved Arjuna. Arjuna was the master archer, and there was every possibility that he will win. The teacher who has taught Arjuna has also taught his 100 cousin brothers. Now, it was such a difficult division. The name of the master who has taught them archery has also chosen to be with the blind man. His blindness created a kind of sympathy that he has been denied, and now it is time for his sons. But he loved Arjuna as his best disciple. Seeing the complexity, knowing perfectly well that we are going to win, but it is going to be a massacre of our own friends, family, relatives. Arjuna told Krishna, take my chariot unto the front so I can see who is on my side and who is on the other side. Seeing the faces, he said, I don't feel like fighting. The throne is not worth that much massacre, and I cannot conceive myself to be on the throne with all these people dead. I have loved them, we have lived together, we have played together. Now this is very unfortunate. It is better I should retire to the Himalayas. Let my brothers rule the kingdom. Obviously their father, because of his blindness, has been denied. And it was not his fault. But Krishna was very much insistent. Krishna's sister was married to Arjuna. He has a vested interest that Arjuna gets the kingdom, wins the war. He argued for the war as an essential necessity at this moment, because those 100 cousin brothers are all sinners, drunkards, gamblers. It is your duty for the sake of goodness to fight. It is not a question only a fight between two parties. It is a fight between darkness and light. It is a fight between God and devil. But Arjuna was not convinced. And the final strategy of Krishna was, which I call very deceptive. And Krishna is one of the incarnations of the Hindus. The perfect incarnation of God. There are other incarnations which are partial incarnations. Krishna is the perfect incarnation. But if you look at him without any prejudice, he is the perfect politician. The final trump card was that he said, as an incarnation of God, I order you to go for war. Remember, it is God's will. Nothing happens against God's will. not even a leaf falls from the tree without the will of God. Now, this was too much for poor Arjuna to fight against. Unwillingly, he went for war. He won the war. It has been 5,000 years now, but he has broken the very spine of this country. After that war, this country has never been interested in war. It has never invaded any country. It has been invaded by many. Small countries have ruled over it for 2,000 years continuously. It has not even resisted, because it has seen in the Indian Great War, as it is called, such a massacre of humanity for the sake of power, for the sake of money. But Arjuna managed, by a very good argument, that nothing happens without God's will. How it can happen without God's will? So don't bring your mind in, just do what God wants. If I have been in place of Arjuna, I have put my arrows and my bow in the chariot and moved towards the Himalayas, saying that this is God's will, what can I do? Nothing happens without His will. Now it is happening. But he got caught in the argumentation and Krishna convinced him that it is a good war. No war is good. No war can be good. Every warmonger in the world has been trying to prove the same thing, that this war is for good. Adolf Hitler killed 6 million Jews in Germany just for God's sake and for the fatherland. He was doing a great service to his fatherland. You cannot find any war that was fought for any other reason but for good reasons, for God. So many crusades, for God, so many living human beings, particularly women, burnt alive. Morality is concerned only with the actions, and I want to say to you, Zen has nothing to do with morality. It is pure religiousness, which is a very higher point of view. It does not decide what is right and wrong. It simply wants your consciousness to have the clarity to see in every situation. The question is never of deciding. Deciding means doubt has already arisen. Deciding means you are wavering. Deciding means half of you is on this side and half of you on that side, and you are troubled where to go. A man of pure consciousness never decides. He simply acts spontaneously. There is nothing good for him and nothing bad for him. The only thing good is to be conscious, and the only thing bad is to be unconscious. Actions don't count. This has to be understood, then Eno's words will be very easy. He is making a very fundamental statement. Eno said, good friends, in this teaching, from the outset, sitting in meditation does not concern the mind, nor does it concern purity. We do not talk of steadfastness. If someone speaks of viewing the mind, then I would say that the mind is of itself delusion, and the delusions are just like fantasies. There is nothing to be seen. If someone speaks of viewing purity, then I would say that man's nature is of itself pure, but because of false thoughts, true reality is obscure. The question is not to find in your thoughts what is right and what is wrong, in your actions what is right and what is wrong. The question is to find a consciousness so total and so intense that whatever is right only remains, and whatever is false burns out. You don't have to decide. And when action arises out of silent meditation, it has a purity and a beauty and a fragrance. It has nothing to do with morality or immorality. Those are very lower considerations of society, of the collective mass. Zen belongs to the highest peaks of the Himalayas, to the highest peaks of consciousness. From there, the vision is clear in all directions. There is no need to decide. You simply see what is the right. We don't even think about it. You simply act. You don't think about the consequences. Out of this purity, only roses can bloom. Out of this purity, there is no possibility of anything. evil arising in you. Zen's concern is a pure religiousness, not religion, remember. Religion has become almost identified with moral conceptions, with commandments. Time goes on changing every moment. Everything is moving. You cannot decide what is right forever. You can only depend on your clarity. What is right today may be wrong tomorrow. Commandments belong to the very lowest class of morality. I remember when God made the world and He went around selling the commandments, He asked the Babylonians, the Egyptians, everybody asked, first tell us, just as a sample, what are your commandments? Just tell us one. And he thought the best will be, without argumentation, that you should not do adultery. The Egyptians said, then what shall we do? Keep your commandment with yourself. We will find our own ways what to do and what not to do. You have done enough that you have made us. Now please leave us. And just on the way he met Moses. Being a Jew, you can understand, Moses' approach was totally different. When he asked, do you want a commandment? Everybody had asked, what is the commandment? Only Moses asked, how much? And God said, it is absolutely free. You don't have to pay anything. Moses said, in that case, I will have 10. And under those 10 commandments, Jews are carrying a load of mountains on their hearts. Everything becomes wrong. Everything makes you feel guilty. And this is not only about the Jews. All the religions have used the strategy to exploit men by making them feel guilty. The first thing is to enslave a man, make him feel guilty that whatever he is doing is wrong. Then he loses his nerve. Then he is not strong enough to resist the oncoming slavery. Your so-called morality and immorality, all are devices of parasites, priests, politicians. This bee is strange. All the pigs and you will be shocked to know that pig is one of the Hindu incarnation of God. Avirbhava is not here. She is finding other ancient gods in the far east. Otherwise she would have enjoyed. She has got the pig already. But she does not know that this is a Hindu incarnation. These priests have made men absolutely unthinking. They have forced only one thing, guilt and belief. A sword with both sides edged, one side it makes you guilty, another side it makes you believe. Because how you are going to get rid of your guilt? The priest is there to help you. He has become on his own account a mediator between you and the God. Just few months before, Pope the Pollock has brought in the world a new sin. It has never existed before. The new sin he has declared is to confess to God directly. You have to confess through the right channel, through the Catholic priest. Because if you start making direct phone calls to God, what is the purpose of the priest and what is the purpose of the Pope? Their purpose is to stand between you and God. And the problem is there is no God. It is their invention. So naturally, they have to stand in between to hide the fiction. If they remove themselves, if you remove all the priests, all the gods will disappear. They are created by men. The Bible says God created man in his own image. It is absolute nonsense. On the contrary, it can be said man created all the gods in his own image. Just fictions. And from those gods descend Paigambars, prophets, Tirthankars, avatars, messiahs, Christ, a simple fiction of God is so reproductive that it creates 1001 fictions, and the man is surrounded into a fictitious world in which the wasted interests are only benefited. The whole humanity is crushed, sacrificed to ideals which have no existence at all. Zen has nothing to do with any worship, any god, any religion. It has nothing to do with any morality. It is a very rare phenomenon. Eno says, if you exclude delusions, then the original nature reveals its purity. All that is needed is put aside your delusions. And your original purity will arise, and you will have for the first time eyes to see and ears to hear the existential. Otherwise, these shopkeepers, Christians and Hindus and Mohammedans and Jews, never allow you to reach to the existence. Just on the way you meet a priest, all directions are full of priests. Wherever you go, you will meet a priest. And he will hand over to you as many commandments as you can carry. He will give you permanent values in an impermanent world. He will give you unnatural ideas which cannot be implemented, and because they cannot be implemented, they make you feel guilty. Almost all the homosexuality is produced by religions, their monasteries, where they force men and women to live apart. It was bound to happen where the sexual energy is going to move. You don't give them any formula for any transformation of the energy. Any alchemy, just you separate men and women, the women become lesbians, the man becomes homosexuals, and now your whole thousands of years of religiousness has produced nothing but AIDS, That is the greatest contribution of all your religions. I have been in contact with all kinds of monks, Hindu, Buddhist, Jain, Christian missionaries, and I was surprised that these people are diverting people's naturality, their purity, a love between a man and woman has a religiousness, has a sacredness. It is natural. While it is, although it is a beautiful delusion. But so what? Everything is delusion. Why not have good delusions? Why insist on having nightmares? But in your monasteries, nightmares are created. Strange things that are unbelievable happen in the Middle Ages. Thousands of women were burnt in the name of God. Priest enjoyed it very much. A special court was made to decide whether the woman is a witch or not. And what was the criterion of a woman to be a witch? The criterion was whether she is making love with the devil or not. They tortured women and just because of the torture, the woman finally has to confess that she has been making love with the devil. Otherwise, they will continue to torture. There is a limit to human patience. And once she has confessed that she is having a love affair with the devil, the court was free to decide that she should be burnt alive . Now there is no witches to be found. It seems devil has become fed up with the women. Or maybe he has also gone gay. One never knows about these gods and devils. Everything is so fictitious. So unbelievable that even it was one time believed that the devil's prick is like a fork and the women, thousands of women, confessed in the court that yes, it is true. He makes love from both the openings together. Such nonsense. And great bishops and popes and cardinals and a special court of grand jury deciding these stupid things, and poor women were first so much tortured that they found only one escape, to confess. Whatever you say, they have to accept it. Now, devil has no more any businesses going around the world. As a consequence, God's own business is becoming a failure, a bankruptcy. Zen is not concerned with such gods and such devils, which are only imaginary nightmares. Its concern is to put aside all fictions of the mind and to let your natural purity have its say. That naturalness all religions have condemned it. That naturalness does not need any God. You cannot find that trees have God, or lions have God, or any birds have God. The moment a man becomes natural, simple, unclouded with any fictions created by the priests to exploit and suck his blood, he sees simply that he is part of this vast cosmos. And whatever is natural, whatever arises out of his own original being, is the only religiousness, the only honesty. But every natural thing has been condemned. And once a thing is condemned, it becomes an obsession. It becomes very desirable. I used to live in a city, Raipur, and just in front of me, lived a very snobbish man. And he was very rich and powerful. He found one day one man pissing by his side of the garden. In India, it is absolutely natural. No constitution, no law against it. He called his servants to beat him. I was looking all this. I said, there is no need. Just write few small boards here and there. You have a big property, a vast garden. Just write on it, don't piss here. He said, the idea is good. And the next day when he woke up, all around the wall, people have pissed as if the whole city became obsessed to piss. Every negation of nature is bound to create an obsession. It became almost difficult to pass from his house not pissing. So many boards calling you forth, your bladders trickling. He was very angry with me. He said, I thought you are a nice fellow. I said, I'm not. I'm simply an ordinary, natural human being. Nice fellows, you are nice fellow. He said, I thought you are a professor of psychology, so you will give me some good suggestion. What kind of suggestion you have given? I said, this is the suggestion which comes directly from God. It was God who first prohibited Adam and Eve not to eat the fruit of the tree of wisdom and the tree of eternal life. It was because of his prohibition that they had to eat, whether devil persuaded Eve or not. It does not matter. If he persuaded, he did a great revolutionary act. He should be worshipped for it. But my understanding is just giving them order that avoid these two trees, and those two trees were nothing but apple trees, so innocent. I lived for years only on apple, just to see how much sin finally my doctors persuaded me that it will destroy your health. Apple is good, but one apple only. But one apple destroyed Adam and Eve. They became sinners. Not only they became sinners, after them all the descendants up to now, we are all sinners. Because Adam and Eve disobeyed God. In fact, the whole responsibility goes on God. Why he gave this stupid idea? In a vast garden of Eden, there were millions of trees. If he had not told them, perhaps we will be still jumping from tree to tree, Charles Darwin included. no need to find where the tail has disappeared. It will be hanging around. No need to find where is the missing man. There has never been any man. It is because of disobedience. I will call it rebellion, that you are here. You have to thank evil for provoking Eve to eat the fruit, and his argument was perfect. Even Aristotle would not have been able to find any fault in her in his argument. He said, God has prohibited only these two trees. Do you know why? Because if you eat the fruit of the tree of wisdom, to me it is a metaphor. It means meditation. And the eternal life, because meditation ultimately finds the eternal sources of life. Those two trees are joined together in their roots. It is one tree, in fact, expressing in two ways, eternal life and wisdom. God has prohibited, according to devil, because he is very jealous. If you eat these fruits, you will also be like gods. And then all his power trick, his speciality is gone. He becomes a commoner. Everybody is a god. What Christianity, Mohammedanism, Judaism had been doing is preventing you from becoming gods. That's why in all these three religions there is no place for meditation. Because meditation will take you to the roots of your being, where wisdom blossoms, where eternal life becomes your own life. You become part of the oceanic existence. And out of this situation, out of this state, there is no question of morality or immorality. Whatever you do, whatever you are, is good, divine. It has a bliss and a grace of its own. And because it comes from your own original source, it gives you a great individuality. You are no more a Christian or a Hindu or a Buddhist. You are no more a follower of anybody. You are simply rejoicing. Your existence, dancing in tune with the trees, with the rivers, with the ocean, with the stars, with the wind blowing through the pine trees, with the rain, with the clouds, you have become one with the whole. There is no question. You cannot hurt yourself. You cannot do what is thought to be evil. It is possible only if you are kept away from your own original self. Zen's search is not for any stupid god or any devil. Its search is for your original face. If you exclude delusions, then the original nature reveals its purity. If you activate your mind to view purity without realizing that your own nature is originally pure, delusions of purity will be produced. There are people who are trying to be pure in different religions, different superstitions. How one becomes pure? I had a friend, he was very old, but he loved me. He was thought to be the father of the Indian Parliament. He remained continuously for 65 years the member of the Indian Parliament. From the very beginning, he was the member. To his last breath, just few years before. But he was a very Puritan. I used to stay in Delhi in his house. He used to drink only milk, because milk is the only purest food, because God Himself has given the child only the milk. Everything else is man-manufactured. The argument seems to be convincing. But the milk has to be only of a cow. I said, up to that point, I could reluctantly agree that it is right that the child is given only the milk. But the child is not given the milk of the cow. Cow has her own children. Taking the milk of the cow is exploiting the cow. And not only he will use cow's milk, the cow has to be absolutely white. No black dots. I said, my God, do you think a black cow gives black milk? He said to me, to be on the safer side. I want absolutely pure milk, so that idiot, although he has many unready delets, used to carry a cow with himself wherever he will go. Behind his car will be a truck carrying a pure white cow, because it was not necessary that in every village you go, and he was a politician, a great constituency he has to visit. It was not possible. Cows you can find anywhere, but sometimes they have brown patches, sometimes black patches. That makes them impure. Strange ideas. If you look without any prejudice, you can only laugh. I was born, unfortunately, in a Jaina family. It is one of the ancient most religions. Even small children are not allowed to eat or drink in the night. You can eat only after sunrise up to sunset. After that, even small children may be thirsty, may be hungry, but there is no way. Up to my 18th year, there was no way, because all food will be distributed by the evening. In the night, even if you enter the kitchen, you cannot find anything. And the conditioning of centuries, I went for a picnic with my school friends. On a nearby mountain, a very ancient, beautiful castle. They were all Hindus, so they were not concerned about day or night. I asked them again and again that just think of me too when you are going to prepare the food. They said, right now we are to explore the whole castle. It has so many things to be explored, hidden water currents, hidden swimming pools, beautiful halls, carved pillars, great statues. I had to remain hungry the whole day, and in the night they started making food. I have never smelled such beautiful food. It was nothing much. But my hunger was so much. And I was constantly holding that I will not eat. But my whole nature was saying that my stomach is hurting. Whole day walking over the mountain around the castle, inside the castle. And they all were very persuasive. And they said, we are not going to tell anyone. I said, it is not a question of telling anyone. The question is, I know that I am eating in the night, and that is a sure way to hell. But finally they succeeded, because they said, if eating in the night is a sure way, then won't you like to come with your friends? We are also going on the same way. You will not be alone. My hunger and their persuasion and the fragrance that was coming from the food all together conspired, and I ate, but the whole conditioning was against. I had to vomit whole night until every single grain that I have eaten was thrown out. I went to sleep only in the early morning hours. But that became a clear point to me that what a superstition can do. Nobody vomited. Everybody slept so soundly. Tired of the whole day's exploration. They were snoring and I was alone. I said to myself that these people were saying, we will be with you. But only I am in the hell, they are all enjoying beautiful sleep, must be having great dreams, and I cannot sleep because that food, unless I throw it out. Practicing purity is not true purity. Purity has to come out of your spontaneity. Anything practiced makes you a hypocrite. And all the so-called religious people are hypocrites because they are practicing religion. Whatever you want to practice, you can practice. You can force your nature into unconscious, into collective unconscious, or even deeper to the cosmic unconscious. But it will remain there. And any moment you are sitting on a volcano, your nature can explode and all your conditions will be thrown away. It is good that they are thrown away and the explosion happens. So only your pure nature without anybody's conditioning you remains the source of your words, of your actions, of your gestures. A religious man, in this sense, is a natural and original man. He does not belong to any organization. To belong to any organization is to go against nature. Just to belong to nature is enough. Purity has no form, but nonetheless, some people try to postulate the form of purity and consider this to be Zen practice. People who hold this view obstruct their own original natures and end up by being bound by purity. There are two kinds of people in the world. One who are suffering from guilt because they could not manage to go against their nature. And the other who are suffering from their saintliness because they did not listen to their nature and went ahead against it. Of course, they have respectability. But their whole being is poor. Their whole being is on fire. They may have become saints by doing all kinds of stupid things that their surrounding society expects. For example, here in India, you will find many people standing on their heads. Even the Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru used to stand up on his head every morning in the garden, and he was respected for it tremendously. He did nothing for the country. But he was respected that he is following yoga. The truth is that if you stand on your head more than 3 minutes, you will destroy many subtle nerves, and there are 7 million nerves in your small skull. If you stand on your head, blood comes like a flood because of gravitation. And that flood destroys the most intelligent part of your brain. Why the animals don't have brains? Because they are horizontal. Their blood circulation is equal to the head, to the tail. It is only men who stands erect on 2 feet. That makes the possibility of the growth of brain. because extending blood reaches not as a flood. It reaches in the right amounts, as much as is needed. The more intelligent a man, the more smaller and complicated nerve system he will have in his head. Albert Einstein has left his head to be examined after his death. He himself was puzzled that why other people are not so intelligent. There must be something wrong with me. He wanted to know. But anyway, there was no way to convey the message to him when he is dead. Now we know what was the matter. He has 26% more nerves than ordinary human brain. Now those nerves can be cultivated, but not by standing on your head. Standing on your head is the worst thing that you can do for your intelligence. But in Hindu conditioning, that posture is very much valued. Not knowing anything what is happening inside, people have followed for thousands of years. It is not a coincidence that 40% Jews receive the Nobel Prize. It is very disproportionate looking at the whole world. Only 3 Hindus have been able to receive Nobel Prize up to now. Such a vast country, such an ancient culture, so many practices, so many disciplines, but as far as intelligence is concerned, it is very low. And yoga is one of the reasons keeping people's brains not growing but any absurdity. If continuously told to you, becomes a great discipline. Every religion is against me. For the simple reason, because I am trying to make it clear to the intelligent people around the globe, that you don't have to practice anything, you don't have to discipline yourself in any way, you don't have to follow any commandments, you have only to go in and allow your own self nature to move according to its own growth. Don't disturb. All that you can do is not to disturb your inner nature. And you will blossom like any great flower. One who practices steadfastness does not see the faults of people everywhere. This is the steadfastness of self-nature. The deluded man, however, even if he does not move his own body, will talk of the good and bad of others the moment he opens his mouth, and thus behave in opposition to the way. Therefore, both viewing the mind and viewing purity will cause an obstruction to the way. You don't have to be a traditionalist, and you don't have to be an anti-traditionalist. This is a great problem. It is very easy to be unorthodox. But it is changing your presence from orthodoxy to non-orthodoxy, from traditionalism to non-traditionalism. Both are binding, both are obstructing your self-nature. Drop both, the negative and the positive, the yes and the no. Simply be, without any judgment. And in this being without any judgment, have arisen the greatest peaks of consciousness man has encountered. Kaizen wrote, "At one stroke I have forgot all my knowledge. There is no use for artificial discipline, for move as I will, I manifest the ancient way." Another Zen poet, "The flute without holes is the most difficult to blow." Not only difficult, it is impossible. What the poet is saying, the flute has all the possibility of bringing songs to the world. Just you have to open all your doors and windows, all your holes, Otherwise, every bamboo will be a flute. They have the potentiality, just a little difference, opening few doors, few windows, just few holes in a hollow bamboo, and it becomes a great instrument of music. Existence can flow through it and can become a great musical wave. Existence has its own sound and its own music. Just we have to be silent enough to hear the soundless sound. Basu wrote, "There is nothing you see that is not a flower. There is nothing you can think of which is not the moon." Great statements, so condensed. There is nothing you see that is not a flower. It may be in the seed. It may be yet not manifest, but there is nothing that has not the potential to blossom. There is nothing you can think of which is not the moon. Moon has become symbolic in Zen because of Gautam Buddha. Gautam Buddha was born on a full moon night. He became enlightened on a full moon night, and he died on a full moon night. Because of this coincidence, the moon has become a symbol of Buddha. Wherever you are, whoever you are the moon, the Buddha. Manisha has asked, "I understood you to say recently that there was no sense given to us to take us inwards, and hence meditation was above the natural, transcendental. What then is the urge, the energy that provokes a person to go above what is natural? And why does going in affect some people's lives even totally change some other people's lives, while it leaves others absolutely untouched?" Manisha, you have asked two questions. One is, what then is the urge, the energy that provokes a person to go above what is natural? Boredom. Have you ever seen a buffalo bored or a donkey bored? In the whole nature you will not find anybody bored except man. Boredom is a unique quality as far as man is concerned, a very high rate quality. Man becomes bored with nature too. But first one should come to be natural. And as you become natural, slowly, slowly you become bored with it. And that boredom is being discussed by the existentialists in the West, but without understanding the deeper implications the East has encountered, they stop on boredom. East has not stopped on boredom. It has taken a quantum leap. It has gone beyond nature. But beyond nature is not against nature. Beyond nature is simply above nature, supranature, transcendental to nature. So there are first finding the self, the nature. There is not much trouble in it. Just you have to put your delusions aside. Then soon you will start feeling bored with the nature itself, because it is repetitive. Waking in the morning, eating your food, going to your work, coming home in the evening, going to your bed, a circle, silent, peaceful, no more tensions of the old days, no more anguishes and worries of the old days, very content, but even contentment at a point becomes boredom. Even peace at a point becomes heavy. Even enlightenment at a point has to be dropped. The moment you drop enlightenment, you transcend nature. Enlightenment is the ultimate point up to nature can take you. And then there is the cliff. Jumping into the unknown, disappearing into the universe, that is the quantum leap. So there are two jumps. One is a very small one, from delusions to nature. The another one is really the great matter. But boredom is the cause. Just look at the life of a Gautam Buddha. No television, no cigarettes, no cards to play, no chess, no football games, no boxing matches. What is in the life of poor Buddha? just a silence. Eternally silent, where nothing happens, no footfall. That's why I say it is very difficult for Americans to become enlightened. They are so much entertained that the point of boredom never comes. They go on changing their wives. In India, you are bound to get bored with your wife, but in America, you will simply change. Why get bored? The average in America, about everything is 3 years. In 3 years, you have to change your wife. You have to change your car. You have to change your house. You have to change your job. You have to change your city. You have to change everything. This way, and 7.5 hours per day, millions of people are just sitting glued in their chairs before that idiot box television. Now they have started a great association. The association of TV potatoes. And people are becoming members and carrying batches of potatoes. It is very difficult in America to become enlightened. So much is going on. It was good Buddha was born 25 centuries before in India. Here, things are very much still the same. Just go into a deeper part of the country in a village and you will find life utterly bored. Simple. But there is nothing, just simplicity. This simplicity comes to a point when you want to disappear in the universe. That is the urge to go beyond the nature. And why does going in affect some people's lives, even totally change some people's life, while it leaves others absolutely untouched? It all depends on the receptivity of the people. You may come across a Buddha. You may even shake hands with a Buddha, and you may not recognize at all anything unusual. You are a bamboo without holes. You are not receptive enough. To recognize a Buddha is in itself a great meditative quality. Unless you have been meditating, you will not be able to see the radiance of the Buddha, nor his rhythmic heartbeat, nor his grace and beauty, nor his area of energy that is created around him, just like a magnet. But deeper you go into meditation, more you can recognize. So few people who are in some way receptive, poets, dancers, musicians, creative people who are not limited by the boundaries of the given knowledge to them, but are always searching for the new, always open to receive a new guest. These people will recognize the Buddha immediately. But there are millions more to whom Buddha is just a word. They are bamboos without holes. They will not be affected at all. It is unfortunate, but you cannot interfere into somebody's life. You cannot start drilling holes into somebody's life to make him receptive. You have just to wait. Perhaps their time has not come. Perhaps tomorrow, or day after tomorrow, and it does not matter in the eternity of time. Whenever it happens, it is always fresh and new. Whenever it is happens, it is always early. Now, let us drill few holes into everybody without touching any screwdriver. Just the hand should be enough. You should not touch. Jablonski goes to the hardware store and asks the manager for a job. Okay, says the manager, you can have the job if you can sell. Can you sell? I guess so, says Jablonski. Well, says the manager, watch me and learn something. A man comes into the store and asks the manager for some grass seed. Fourth aisle over, third shelf, says the manager. The man runs with the grass seed and the manager says, "Would you like to buy one of our new lawn mowers? They are on sale right now." "What?" says the man. "But I don't even have my grass yet." "I know," says the manager, "but you will be in a few weeks and then you will need a new lawn mower. And if you buy one now, it will be much cheaper." "I guess you are right," says the man, and he buys the lawn mower. So says the manager to Jablonski, "Do you think you can do that?" "Sure," replies Jablonski, "no problem." "Okay," says the manager, "I have to go to the bank. You take over and sell." Jablonski nods and waits for his first customer. Just then a woman walks up to the counter and says, "Where are your tampons?" 5th aisle over, 4th shelf down, replies Jablonski professionally. When she returns to pay, Jablonski asks, "Do you have a lawn mower?" "No." "Why?" asks the woman. "Well," says Jablonski, "you might as well mow the lawn while you are not doing any fucking." Young Leonard Loophole is on vacation in the woods and he decides to write a letter to his girlfriend, but he has no writing paper with him. So he walks to a nearby village store. Inside, he approaches the girl attendant, Molly Must, a very sexy young brunette. "Do you keep stationery?" asks Leonard. "Well," says Molly in a sexy voice, "I can until the last few seconds and then I go completely wild." Zabriski is leaving on a business trip to Poland. "I always hate to leave," he says to his friend Klopski. "I never trust my wife on her own. There is always this doubt, always this doubt." "Don't be worried," says Klopski. "I am your best friend. While you are gone, I will keep an eye on her." "Really?" says Zabriski. "Would you do that for me?" "I am so relieved. I know that I should trust my wife, but there is always this doubt, always this doubt." "It is okay," says Klopski. "Leave it to me." 3 weeks later, Zabriski returns and meets with his friend. "I am afraid I have some bad news," says Klopski. "Well, what is it?" asks Zabriski. "The very first night you were gone," tells Klopski, "I watched same as all round, sneak into the back door of your house, your wife met him there, dressed only in high heels and red satin panties, really? Asked Zabriskie. Then what? Then Samus kissed your wife and he put his hand down into her red satin panties. Really? Asked a shocked Zabriskie. Then what? Then says Klopski, she put her hand down inside his pants and Samus began kissing her breasts. Really? Grasped Zabriskie. Then what? Then continues Klopski, they fell back onto the sofa. She threw off her panties, he threw off his pants, and then the lights went out. So I could not see anymore. What? The lights went out. Shouts Zabriskie, you see, there is always this doubt. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Gather yourself in. Nothing exists outside. Just concentrate on the center of your being. This is the only refuge. To be in this space, you are beyond death, beyond life. you are meeting with the existence except this meeting all religion is simply talk. From this point you can take the jump and disappear into the open sky. It is within you to transcend even yourself. Rejoice this moment. Feel blissful. See the flowers everywhere. Look in everything the moon. From your space of Buddhahood, the whole existence becomes a great poetry, a great song, a great creative energy arises out of this space. This nothingness, this emptiness is the origin of the smallest grass leaf up to the biggest star. Deeper, deeper, don't hold anything, just go deeper. Nivedana, relax. The body is there. The mind is there, but you are not the body, you are not the mind. You are just the watcher. Just the witness. Nothing has ever happened to you. And nothing will ever happen to you. You are just a mirror reflecting this moment. This suchness is your original nature. Everything else is imposed on you. This space is purely your own. To realize this is to become a Buddha. It is simply a recognition. You are already a Buddha, just you don't have the guts to recognize and to remember into your day-to-day work. 24 hours you are a Buddha. There is not even a holiday for your Buddha. Just keep this consciousness as an undercurrent flowing into all your activities, waking, sleeping. This is the only religiousness that I know. All so-called religions are political exploitations, fictions of the priests. They have taken the whole dignity of human beings, they have made them slaves and sacrificial. Only you can assert your freedom by being a Buddha. Out of this, whatever you do is right, is good, is graceful. This moment, this place is so blessed that 10,000 Buddhas have melted like ice into each other. There is only one lake of Buddhahood. Drink out of it. Nivedana. Come back from your great experience, but bring the fragrance of it with you. Sit down like a Buddha for a few seconds. Collecting all that has happened in these few moments within you. Becoming clearly aware of the road that leads to your innermost course, because you will be going and coming on the same way every day. This is the way towards your home, where you are the host, not the guest. Can we celebrate the Buddhas?
Yes.